Over the weekend, voters in Switzerland rejected a proposal that would have given all residents a monthly income, a check from the government, about $2,500 a month for adults, $600 for every child under 18, about $30,000 to every adult, working or not. It's called a universal basic income. Swiss voters turned it down, but others are giving it serious consideration. Jarek Thompson is senior editor at The Atlantic. He joins us as he does every Monday from New York. Hi, Jarek.
Hello.
The Swiss vote. First of all, why Switzerland?
Why Switzerland? Well, the Swiss have a referendum system where if an issue gets 100,000 signatures, it can be put to a national vote. That makes it pretty easy for the public to vote on issues with smaller appeal. 100,000 signatures is a little more than 1% of Switzerland's entire population. So that's one reason, certainly. But it's also fitting that this policy would have some of its strongest support in Europe, because Europe is so far ahead of a lot of other advanced economies when it comes to welfare. They spend more money on children, on income transfers to the poor, have higher taxes. So it would make sense that we'd see this movement. And basic income is truly having its moment as a movement right now.
It is.
Start in Europe.
Yeah, it has support from Nobel laureate Princeton economist Angus Deaton, Facebook co-founder Chris Hughes. Just what's the thinking behind it? Free money to people.
Free money. There's really three different groups that I see who have their own reasons for supporting a basic income, or as some economists shorthand, UBI, universal basic income. First, you have liberals who say, look, the U.S. is this fabulously rich country, France or England, these fabulously rich countries where there are still millions of people living in poverty. If we're serious about ending poverty, let's just give people money until there's no poverty. Second, there are some conservatives like Charles Murray in the United States who says, if we replace the current welfare system with all of its distortions with a basic income, it's the simplest way to help the poor without distorting the market with this enormous bureaucracy to oversee this administration. So you have maximum assistance with minimal footprint. The third line of reasoning, which is shared a bit by both groups, is that the world is changing, and with slow-growing wages and expanding income inequality and the long-tail risk of robots and automation taking jobs, that we need a kind of insurance policy against the excesses of modern capitalism.
Okay, so that's some of the in favor. Who's against, and what are they saying?
And right now, the con argument. Let's take three, just so I'm perfectly fair and balanced. The first objection is just on cost. Some people don't want government spending billions, in the U.S. maybe trillions of dollars, on a new policy. A second, slightly more nuanced objection would be that in a world that's constrained by scarcity, scarce budgets, a universal basic income isn't the best way to help the poor. Direct welfare spending would be better. Public education funding would be
paying
better.
For
healthcare
training,
policy.
Yeah, training. So exactly. That they could take some of the new jobs. Yeah.
That's right. And then you have this third objection on work ethic. If everybody has money, whether or not they work, will they in fact choose to work in a world where work is scarcer?
And what's the pushback on that? Because there has been study, you know, there are people who would say there's a need in humans to work no matter what.
Right. A lot of the studies have shown a small disincentive to work, not a huge one. But the honest truth, and sometimes economists aren't always the best at expressing humility, we just don't know. There is no country in the world that has a basic income policy for its entire population. This is a truly disruptive idea in the actual definition of the word disruptive. We don't know what it would do to culture, to expectations to work, to family relations in a lower income area where everybody suddenly has thousands of dollars more than they did, you know, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. It would reshape culture, I think.
Well, and some economists are saying, you know, one of the reasons to do this is that culture's economics depends on consumers having money to buy things. So part of that is that these people would be getting this money and then buy things, so that you have an engine in the economy. But we know Finland is going to have a basic income pilot. They're going to pick, I think, 10,000 people and try it. Here in the U.S., in Oakland, a tech company is going to start giving 100 families a basic income of a minimum wage. So people are testing this out.
They are testing it out, and they're testing it out in smaller areas. They're not testing it. We don't yet have a country like Switzerland might have been where you could study the effects between cities. You could study the effects among thousands and thousands of people, millions of people, actually. Finland's trying to test it between 1,000. I think that in the long run, the most honest thing to say about a basic income is that it is truly – the movement is cresting, and there will be some major pilot efforts in the next few years that see exactly how people react, particularly lower-income people, when they have guaranteed money from the government. Will they continue to look for work? Will it change relationships with families? Will there be new laws written into the system whereby some of this basic income can be taken away from you if you behave in ways that the government doesn't want you to? It's going to be a fascinating few years, yeah. No doubt, and technology is pushing this along.
Right. And the big question, will it fight poverty and social inequality and guarantee a dignified life for everyone, which is the goal of the proponents. Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, thanks so much.
Thank you.